All right, Real Racing USA, live from the Snook River Grill. It doesn't get a whole lot much more live than this.
Hey, don't worry about
you,
it.
You hit
don't
the wrong button it. Again.
Jack's pulling wires out over here.
2505 Manatee Avenue East. Now, every week, Jack, I say we're live from the Snook River Grill.
Can't draw flies live.
2505 Manatee Avenue East. Every week, we give out the phone number, right? 941-748-3490. There's certain people that are saying that they're dying to be on our show. They know where we're at. This is where we're at. This is our phone number. Once again, 2505 Manatee Avenue East, about 15 miles west of Miami.
Hell, he can even come down to see us. I'll give him an autograph.
Well, I'll buy him. No, I won't buy him nothing.
Sparkling Bradenton.
Anyway, I'll buy coffee.
I ain't buying him nothing. 2505 Manatee Avenue East, 941-748-3490. We are Real Racing USA. I'm Rick Angies.
Craig Clark.
Jack Smith.
Are you calmed down?
Hey, I'll tell you what, man.
Drink another cup of coffee.
I got to tell you what.
Tell me.
You know, we started about 2 months ago. We started this ASA Fast Lane show on Wednesday night, featuring the drivers and other people,
good
too,
show.
Of the ASA
it's
Fast
a very
Lane.
Very good show.
Terry Wall from Kentucky, myself from South Florida. And
Central Florida.
Actually, I'm from South Florida.
No, you're south of here, but just
I like
Central
South
Florida.
Florida sounds better than Central Florida.
You
anyway,
Florida,
we've got a ton of listeners, man. It's really cool. And we've that show is just continuing to grow. And the Thursday night show with Carol Wicks and Jason Beckner.
Special news coming with that show, isn't there? Isn't there a change,
A Thursday night, some announcements are going to be made about the future. That show is just taking off. Now,
that's
it gets
blown up.
People calling, sending us wonderful emails, and that makes it it makes it all worthwhile.
Speaking of the ASA, this weekend, broadcast live from New Smyrna Speedway. Of course, Matt and Bill. Up in the tower.
That's right, Matt Fryer.
You and
Bill
I will
Green.
Be down in the pits.
Yep.
Doing the pit reporting.
Yep. Rick Warren will be there taking the best photographs anybody can
we
take
got
outside
crew.
Of Jim Jones, and I'm hoping my buddy Jim Jones is going to be there too. But I don't
sure.
know for
sure. New Smyrna, Jim Jones.
He should be.
He should be.
He should be.
Positioned up there in the crazy post in turn number four.
Yep.
But
Jason. And speaking of the ASA Fastlane on Wednesday night this week, Jason Boyd. One of those Gong Show guys, former champion of the Sunbelt Series, champion of the Goodyear Challenge, champion. I mean, he's been a champion of all kinds of stuff. He raced in the old ASA, remember?
Yes, he did.
He's going to try to make this race.
Frankie Grill's car.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact,
he replaced
Wayne Anderson.
That's a fact, he did.
Yes,
he's going to race in the ASA race or at least try to make the field.
Racing Jason Boyd. He'll be a guest?
Yes, tomorrow night, Wednesday night.
That'll be awesome. And
Tommy King.
Tommy King been around for a while. Did Tommy King raced in the 12 hours of Ocala, didn't he?
He damn near won it. He came in second.
He raced in his truck.
He came in second.
Yes, sir. That's right.
12-hour race. He came in second. This guy, he's another one. But, you know, we've been doing some, like, obviously you learn things as you go along. It's absolutely fascinating how many drivers come out of Auburndale, Lakeland, Florida area. Polk County?
Oh, no doubt.
It is unbelievable.
The Wrights, Wayne Morris.
Sean Bass.
Derek Kelly. The list
Fontaine.
Goes on. Fontaine. Mario Goslin. Mario Goslin shops right there in Auburndale.
That just scratches the surface.
Yeah, yeah. Central Florida, man, the hotbed.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah.
So, welcome to the show.
One thing, Craig made it back.
I
do know is... that the truck series at New Smyrna is the Advanced Auto Parts Truck Series.
That's right, and we're going to have Terry Roberts, the general manager of New Smyrna Speedway, on Thursday night inside Florida Racing with Carol Wicks.
Terry Roberts, the general manager of New Smyrna Speedway.
That's correct.
He is the man at New Smyrna Speedway.
He is the man.
Of course, John Arone's in charge of the Fast Car Touring Series.
He takes care of the Touring Series.
Right.
And I guess we better get down to brass tacks. I've been kind of like dreading this moment, but we're going to have to talk about it. And I think we're just going to throw this ball over at Craig because this is his turf. We got some things we really don't want to talk about, but we're going to have to.
Well, it's for those that hadn't heard, there was quite a tragedy up in Selmer, Tennessee on Saturday night. Involving a exhibition on a public street with a ProMod race car, there were 6 fatalities and 18 to 20 plus people injured.
And most of the fatalities are teenagers.
Most of the fatalities, unfortunately, I'd like to say the the sad part is it was a benefit for kids.
Yeah, it was the Cars for Kids.
Cars for Kids charity,
which draws 40,000 to 60,000 people
to a town of 4,000.
40,000 to 60,000 people. Actually, do you know what Selmer was famous for before this?
Yeah, I do, okay. But I can't remember right now.
That's something about the preacher's wife.
Mary Winkler shot the preacher.
There you go.
Yeah. But everything had just returned to normal there. But go ahead.
And there's a lot of issues. A lot of people are pointing fingers. There's a lot going back and forth. I would like to just extend my sympathies to all the victims' families. The drivers involved, the promoters of the event. I mean, trying to do a worthwhile cause. However, it all gets back to that same thing that we keep beating our drum on, pre-planning an event.
Sometimes it's not the time, I guess it's going to have to happen. There'll be comments about the event will have
this
to
is
probably
not
wait for another time.
The first time they've ever done this event.
No, they've done it many times.
It's like 6 years, I believe, is how many times they've been doing this. And they've done this exact thing, the burnouts.
Yesterday I talked with the Steve Kaufman, who's the executive editor at the Jackson Sun in Jackson, Tennessee. That's the nearest significant newspaper, largest paper, close to Selmer. And he has several reporters working on it. As a matter of fact, as of an hour ago, the entire staff was in a meeting laying out their plans for coverage of the event in the coming days. We're going to talk with Wendy Isom, who is one of the reporters working on that story. We're going to talk to her in a little bit. Later on the show, we're going to talk to Brad Smith, who travels all over the country in drag racing, stock car racing. He covers it all. He is the owner of RH Two-Way. It's all about racing radios.
We tried to burn his trailer down one time, speaking of safety.
We gave it a good shot at burning the man's trailer down, and he still respects us enough to come on our show.
That's a great guy.
He's a great guy.
Yeah.
And we're going
to
have
you guys how to do that.
We're going to have a guy who, Rick, you and I were on this guy's radio show in the Tampa market about 10 years ago.
Oh,
it seems like forever.
Forever.
Doug Auld, who is known all around the country as a pretty good guy in the news media.
Well, the aficionado, however you say that, of open wheel racing.
Yeah.
And Sprint Car Midget Magazine.
Runs a couple of magazines.
He actually tried his hand at sprint car racing there for a little bit.
Yep, and we're going to talk to we're going to get an update from Rick Bristol. They had a meeting yesterday about the big thing that they do in Central Florida every year to raise money for a family that's in need. It's the Truckers 200 charity event, and it's at Orlando Speed World in December. But they had a big meeting yesterday to lay out some of the final plans for that. It's a big deal. We'll bring some NASCAR names to it, just as it did last year. David Ruderman was one of the featured guests last year. And then, of course, we're going to talk with Stage and Stevie LaTempe again, as we do every week.
All Harley drag racing, man.
All Harley, man. Chicago Joe Scotella, who is this is going to be quite a story, and people in the drag racing world obviously know about that, and especially in the All Harley world know about it, but that's something you don't want to miss. And then there's Bruce Koenberger III, 2-time champion in the Drag Masters Hot Street, and he's going after it again. And we're going to talk to both those guys, and who knows what else we might go down tonight.
You never know. We'll go back to that while Craig's getting our reporter on the air. The guy who drove that car, Troy Critchley, is actually originally from Australia.
Yes.
He's a 20-year veteran. He was injured in it. Somebody drove him to the hospital. But, we watched some of those videos of that, and it's just
tough stuff.
Tough, man. I mean, just unbelievable, some of the stuff that I couldn't even imagine. We go to these stock car tracks every weekend, and talk about the lack of safety at some of them and stuff, but when I watched that video, you know, we're standing behind concrete walls and fences and, you know, 12 feet away from the actual racetrack that's probably 6 feet below us. These people were on the side of the road and felt safe. I mean, and they were packed. It was crazy.
I wouldn't stand on the side of the thing where Tiger Woods is hitting his golf ball.
Not to make light of it, but none of them had a vest.
Is it okay?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it was crazy. And,
you know, by the way, while we have a minute, Craig's on the phone right now with the folks up there. We have a new person working in the Karnak deal as far as getting the news stories on properly, edited properly, because you know so much, you know.
Right. I did it for a while.
Some of them are just a mess.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Joe Blue.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Good job,
Joe. She's been doing a good job.
Great job.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm amazed.
Yeah, I can remember some of the stuff I used to get in emails. Trying to decipher it.
But adding, you know, we like to put a lot of photographs on the stories and stuff like that. And it's been helpful.
Okay, let's go to a commercial break.
We're going to go to a commercial break. It seems that what we're going to do is talk to Wendy Isom. They're still in this meeting, and she just told us about 20 minutes. So we're going to come back from commercial break and hopefully either talk to Brad Smith or maybe even Doug Ald. Who knows?
Do you need to raise your land and business to new heights? Then you need to call Evergreen Development and Construction. They do it all, from land development, construction, drainage, excavating, site prep, and even environmental projects. No job is too big for Evergreen Development and Construction. Give them a call at 813-478-8847. And don't forget to check out the late model Evergreen Development Construction Race Team. They'll be at a track near you. And remember, just think green. Evergreen Development and Construction. 813-478-8847.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Movie Theater Ticket Ripper Upper.
Mr. Movie Theater Ticket Ripper Upper.
Truly the long arm of the law at the movie theater. You and a velvet rope are all that keep the huddled masses from a free flick.
You're the man now.
Ever vigilant, you boldly demand to see our stub. Getting a little personal, don't you think?
Can I see your stub?
Who's the guy in the military-style uniform that would make any third-world dictator proud? Mr. Movie Theater Ticket Ripper Upper, that's who.
Salute the general.
So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, Stubmaster, because you really tear it up.
Mr. Movie Theater Ticket Ripper.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
It's no wonder everybody says nobody beats a Dayton Andrews Dodge deal. I mean nobody. They must sell 200 cars, trucks, and vans to break all sales records. In order to do that, they'll guarantee $1,000 if they can't beat any deal you bring into them on any new or used vehicle in stock. Every new Dodge drastically reduced. Every used vehicle drastically reduced. How about no money down? Take advantage of these great offers with lender's approval. $1,000 guaranteed includes rebates, and they reserve the right to buy back the vehicle from the selling dealer to give to their customer at a lower price. Ask about the $4,000 minimum trade-in allowance. Check out the Dodge Caravans, the Durangos, and the Neons. This week, Dayton Andrews Dodge is offering the lowest prices and also no money down. Call 321-0500. See that the Dayton Andrews Dodge way beats all the other ways to shop for a vehicle. 22nd Avenue and US 19 in St. Petersburg, Dayton. Andrews Dodd.
Was Malibu Beach Bimbo Barbie. In the 80s, little girls adored glamour hyper yuppie Barbie. In the 90s, it's overpriced flatulent wedding Barbie. All rich, all beautiful, all enough to make you Ralph your guts out. Welcome to the real world of redneck Barbie.
Hey, Bert! Whoa!
No Corvette, no power yuppie Malibu Beach mansion, just realistic Southern style living.
Oh, get 10 bottle of beer and water, them dishes.
Live with Barbie in her fantasy double wide with anatomically correct Ken Bob doll.
Ken Bob, get off your lazy old butt and come back. Get her taped over.
Get Ken Bob drunk with the Barbie Redneck 12-pack survival kit, and Redneck Barbie's stomach will swell every 9 months.
Oh, good my bacon.
Watch Redneck Barbie and Ken Bob argue over money when Ken Bob gets laid off from his mill job.
How big are you supposed to buy a skull and spoil my 10 young full boat?
Redneck Barbie, Ken Bob doll, Redneck Baby Barbie Maker, and Fantasy Double Wide all come complete. Skinner tape selection, NWA wrestling tickets, and 12-pack survival kit sold separately. New from Matt Brown.
Okay, Real Racing USA.
All right.
Getting it all sorted out, getting the knots untied.
Knots?
Yeah. Getting the knots untied.
What did I call that thing? A Rubik's Cube.
Rubik's
man.
Cube.
Give me
yes.
some, Jack, give me some of your Prozac.
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 I need some Prozac,
yeah,
Prozac today, boy.
Good.
I'll tell you what.
Some Valium, some over the counter
you know,
medication.
Oh, okay. We'll save all this humdrum stuff for later because we have like a seriously, seriously cool guest on right now.
The originator. Of all this stuff that we're doing.
That's right.
And he never had near the problems, and he did it back in the old days.
And he had no idea what effect he had that day when he invited us to his show.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Doug Hall. Doug, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. How about you guys?
Oh, we're doing great, man, so far. Anyway, we're getting there. Doug, it's been a long time, man. You know, last time I saw you, I think it was 2 years ago at East Bay. But I remember, oh, God, 10 years ago, Jack and I, when we were just starting out with this Karnak thing, being on your radio show, Short Track USA.
Mm-hmm.
And you really kind of got the ball rolling with this radio stuff now that we're, you know, we're on the internet now. But back then, not only did you get the ball rolling with the racing radio, local and national, you got the message board deal going too.
Oh, I don't want to take credit for that.
Well, but it's true.
You did.
Well, yeah, message boards, there's good and bad to message boards. So, I think in theory they're great when they're used right. You know, they're a great place for guys to trade information and tell people what's going on. And when they're used in the wrong way, they can be a disaster. So, there's good and bad to the message board deal.
No doubt about it. But, now where did the idea for you come up with the radio deal?
Well, it had been done in Florida, but not for a long time. And actually, I wasn't even aware of until I'd started the radio show. It seemed like something that was natural. There was not a whole lot of media attention of all the racing, and there's so much great racing in Central Florida. And it just seemed like a natural thing that needed to exist. And when I started the show, that's when I heard about everyone kind of came to me and told me at that point that Dickie Edwards and Speed Sport Roundup had been around probably been 10 or 12 years, 15 years before I'd started, but it had been that long since somebody had done something like that, and everybody just kind of embraced it. We had a lot of help from the racers who really took an interest in it and came out to the show, and it just kind of took off from there.
And your show was originally, what, an hour long?
Yeah, we were the fastest hour in radio. We were a one-hour show, and we stayed at 1 hour because every time I went out to a racetrack, somebody would invariably come up and say, hey, your show needs to be 2 hours long. So I figured we were doing the right thing. If we were an hour, everybody wanted more than that, and that we were probably the right length, you know.
Now, where do your roots start in racing?
New York, actually. That's where I was originally from. My dad raced modifieds for years back in the 50s in New York and Connecticut, and then when I moved down to Florida, that was part of the reason for getting down there was to get involved with the racing scene in Florida. There was a lot going on, and there just wasn't a lot of media coverage, and it just kind of went from there.
And then you you moved up to what, magazines?
Yeah, well, that was I was writing for the Tampa Tribune while I was down there and doing some work for a number of magazines, and then when Open Wheel moved down to Florida, to Lakeland, that just all kind of fell into place. It took me 4 weeks of tracking everybody down and staying on them and trying to get in somewhere at Open Wheel, and ended up being the editor. They originally were going to hire me for Stock Car Racing, but which was the larger publication, really. But really, I've always had a thing for the sprints and the midgets, and got with Open Wheel and went from there.
Now, didn't you climb into a sprint car there for a while?
Yeah, I still race. I haven't been out yet this season. We've got a brand new Maxim we're putting together right now. But, yeah, I do also race Wing 360. So there's a lot of that up here, too. So that's time to get going.
Where are you at right now?
Our office is located in Piqua, Ohio, which is about 30 minutes north of Dayton. So the closest track here would be Eldora Speedway. And we've got so many tracks right around here between Eldora and KC Raceway, Attica, Fremont, Lima Land, Winchester, and there's just a lot of really good racetracks, and that's why we relocated up here. Florida was nice. I mean, the weather was great all year round. You can't beat that. We had a lot of good friends down there. You know, the racing that the guys in Florida do is fantastic, but it just, to do this magazine, it was tough, throughout Open Wheel and then throughout Sprint Car Midget magazine. It's not exactly the Sprint Car Midget capital of the world, so I spent a lot of time in airports going back and forth to Indiana, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Knoxville, Iowa, at different places where we could get to the national events, and it just made sense to relocate up here and be in the middle of it. It didn't make much sense in the middle of the winter when it's 10 below degrees, but for the magazine, it makes a lot of sense.
Now, we had Kevin Ruick on last week, and he said that there are a ton of problems with the asphalt racing up there in Ohio.
Ohio, I don't know if too many problems with the asphalt racing. 90% of what I cover is on the dirt. They don't do a lot of the asphalt racing with the sprints in Ohio. Indiana, you've got Anderson, you've got Winchester, you've got Salem. A lot of the tracks that USAC runs, for example, and I don't, you know, they haven't had any trouble at any of those places. But with some of the other divisions, maybe there's stuff going on that I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, what did you go to the big event recently at Eldora with the NASCAR deal over there?
The Prelude? No, I don't really cover that, and so I kind of debated running over, and we were actually on crunch time to get to print, so I passed on it. So, but the event was an incredible success, and all that money went to Victory Junction Gang, which is really, I mean, Tony's done a lot for that. Charity, even though he's got the Tony Stewart Foundation, that's kind of something that his mom works on, and Tony's really been very, very tied to the Victory Junction Gang, and he doesn't like people knowing about this because he's got a great bad boy image he's developed over the years, but I mean, at one point alone, he wrote a check for $1 million out of his pocket to that organization, and he wrote another check since then, I believe, for probably about half that, and then this Prelude to the Dream, all of the money from that, the pay-per-view, the event at the track, all of it goes to the Victory Junction Gang. So it's just a great event for everybody, and the response that's been out there since the televised event, I think it really did a great job to show people what's going on at the short tracks.
Yeah, what do you see as the biggest trends lately in the world of dirt stock car racing?
Well, the stock car racing I don't follow as much, but it seems like it's healthy. I mean, you know, as far as the dirt late models go, it's kind of interesting to be. I watch a little bit of what's going on between the World of Outlaws and Scott Blomquist and some of the other politics going on with that, but it's a healthy sport. I mean, it's a lot of cars, a lot of participants, and, you know, you can throw an event like the Dream or the World 100, and it's amazing the quantity and the quality of the cars that show up. And those guys put on a good show. I mean, obviously I'm partial to the sprints and the midgets, but the stuff that the late model guys are doing, I mean, I can go out and, unlike some of our readers who are kind of ultra, ultra hardcore and will watch nothing but a particular type of sprint car race, you know, I can go out and watch those guys and just like down at East Bay and the other places around Florida, those guys put on a great show. So, you know, the Prelude to the Dream, the fact it wasn't sprint cars, you know, I'm still real happy with what they were able to do. I mean, those guys, everybody told me they put on a great race, and it was really well received.
You know, used to have Thursday Night Thunder when we had the midgets and the sprint cars and stuff on ESPN. But this past Sunday, something started over again with the World of Outlaws on ESPN2. So that's going to get a lot of national coverage for the sprint car guys again.
They're banking on that. They've got a package this year with about 20 races between Speed and the ESPN2. I just, you know, the television is good to have. It's a necessity for for getting on a title sponsor. I don't know that it's the end-all, be-all. You know, Ted Johnson kind of made that mistake a while back with the World of Outlaws, with the TNN equity partnership deal that he signed, which was a great deal, and it was a great television package. But the assumption was, well, as soon as we get on TV, all these corporations are going to get involved, and everything's going to just roll for us. And the other thing that everybody anticipated was this huge growth in the fan base, and that never happened. None of it ever happened. So the TV is a great package. It's a great, how do I put this? When you go to talk to Coca-Cola or Pepsi, you need to have a good television package. But it's, that's about where it ends. We really haven't gotten many new fans on over the years from the TV. And I think the biggest problem with sprint cars in particular is that it's really hard to televise sprint car racing in a way that if someone's never seen it before, they turn it on TV and get turned on to it. I've never had anyone to come to me and say, hey, I saw this on TV and I became a fan, or I had to go out to the races. So it's good to have. I just I kind of look at the what they're hoping for from this, and I don't know that it can live up to what they're hoping it'll deliver. But it's great to be on ESPN2 and Speed again with sprint car racing, and those are two good networks.
Yeah, when you're watching sprint cars, if you're not there, you really can't. It's,
can't justify
you
it.
You cannot see or get the feeling for what this is all about, because it's a multi. There's no doubt it's. You got all of your senses involved there.
Yeah. And
so, you got to taste that dirt or that asphalt or that. You know, it's like, man.
Yeah, and a sprint car race is you know, what it says. It's a fast, quick race, 30 laps usually. And, you know, a lot happens at once throughout the pack, and there's just no way to really capture that. And, it was interesting watching an Outdoor Channel last year, who I think did a great job in that they stepped up, and their coverage was 100% free. They paid the money for the production crew, and they put up the airtime and promotion of the sport. And I think they kind of got dumped on a little bit, that the Outlaws pulled from them and ran to ESPN2 and Speed, which I understand why they did it. Outdoor Channel doesn't have as large a coverage area. They didn't have quite the equipment that they're using now in the production. But at the same time, Outdoor Channel really took a gamble on the World of Outlaw Sprint Cars and USAC, and went out and invested their own money and their own production crew, and they were on every single week on Outdoor Channel, and the crossover was great between hunting and fishing and racing. There's a natural crossover. So it was interesting to watch the Outdoor Channel evolve from the point where they came on as they learned how to televise racing and get at least a little better at it, where they went from doing those single car shots to those wide shots where we saw multiple cars at a time and could really see a number of battles going on at once. But that's what has to be done, and there's really not a great way to do that on TV to cover the entire field like you can when you're there.
Yeah, I know. When I remember when that was first announced that they were going to be doing the Outdoor Channel, we were kind of, several of us do this stuff down here in Florida, we're kind of laughing about it because it seemed like, what? how do you go from guys in camouflage suits tracking elk to sprint cars? But they've obviously made it work.
Yeah, well, Outdoor Channel, unfortunately, has pulled out now since they got the legs kind of knocked out of, from under them by the World of Outlaws or Dirt Motorsports, or actually it's World Racing Group now is what they're called. But they put an investment in for a number of years and tried to make it work, and it's not an obvious crossover, but it is something where it's kind of the same demographic, guys that are outdoors kind of guys that hunt and fish. You notice a lot of racers tend to hunt and fish. So there is a crossover there, and for guys like Terry McCall, for example, with Big Game Tree Stand, they were disappointed. They would have preferred to stay on Outdoor Channel as opposed to go to the bigger networks. So there is a crossover there. I don't know where you go from, you know, panning for gold, some of the other programming they've got, but... I still say that, you know, I appreciate what Outdoor Channel did and that they put up the money and they put up the effort to televise it, whereas, you know, the Speed package and the ESPN2 package are pretty much paid programming.
You know, let's switch gears here real quick. I know the majority of what you cover is dirt, but you do cover open wheel. What do you think about the change that USAC made from the traditional sprint car to the car they race today?
The sprint car or the Silver Crown?
The Silver Crown.
Oh, the Silver Crown car. I thought the concept was pretty good. I don't know why we had to sit down and reinvent a Silver Crown car. That, no one's ever really been able to explain that to me. I don't know of there ever being a meeting where people sat down and debated if they needed to change the car. it was just an assumption made by USAC management that these cars wouldn't be safe on these larger tracks, which I don't really understand. The cars were kind of topping out on the mile tracks that they were already running. And I guess the best example would be if you took your, you know, 1971 Pinto and you drove it on a quarter mile of the track, you'll probably be able to get up to about 75 miles per hour. If you take your 71 Pinto and drive it on 2.5 mile track, you're only going to get 75 mile per hour. And the Silver Crown car is kind of the same deal. They go obviously a lot faster than that, but we'd reached a point on the mile tracks where these cars were kind of topping out already. So the fact that they were on a larger track, you know, there's not infinite speed. I mean, I don't really know what the mindset was that, well, if we put these cars on these big tracks, we have to build them a lot safer and recreate the whole car. And USAC's original concept was to try to use as many of the parts as they could off the conventional car. And they ended up with something that you can, I don't know if there's a single part on that car other than your seat that you can use in the new Silver Crown car. And part of that comes from the people that they let develop the car, which were guys that had never built a Silver Crown car before. And they really locked the Silver Crown manufacturers out. And I was a huge supporter of the concept of what they were doing. I think what they ended up doing was a disaster.
Well, and you can kind of see it in the way the points are running now, that the guys that were usually up top aren't really up there anymore.
Well, I mean, I think one of the biggest problems you'll see as a car owner, the guys that run Silver Crown kind of ran the gamut. There were highly funded teams, and there were guys that ran out of a two-car garage. And now they're kind of going back to these people and saying, hey, we want you to buy these cars, which the cars race-ready run for about $100,000, which is a lot of money. And on top of that, let's throw into the picture that you're going to run against Roger Penske's team. So you can't do that out of a two-car garage. You can't compete against Roger Penske, so there's no reason to do it. And the car that they've come up with is ugly, it's expensive, and it's just, I don't know where they go from here. They've kind of committed to it, but it's definitely not been a success.
Well, and it kind of showed at the opening race at Homestead, they had like 75 people in the grandstands.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a lot of interest for it. It's kind of like the I've had a couple of car owners over the years say, I wish we'd bring back the rear wing sprint cars that they tried for about 2 years out back whiles back. I've never had anyone come to me and say, I wish I could see a good rear wing sprint car race. So that's kind of where you have to start. And I think USAC has kind of put the cart before the horse with some things and forgotten that, you know, this is a spectator sport. There's got to be a fan desire to see what we're doing, and that's what's got to kind of drive what we're doing. And I don't think the fans wanted to see a redesigned Silver Crown car. The car really is ugly, and they got themselves kind of in a catch-22 because now it's very expensive to change over. So you've got car owners who invested in this, and it would be very expensive to make changes to the nose and to some of the things that would change the looks of the car. And so they're kind of stuck with what they've got now.
And there's no doubt about it in my mind. You know, I've been to races, all different kinds of races, from late-mile sprint cars, road racing, and there is not a fan base like the sprint car fan base.
Yeah, and they lost the traditional Silver Crown fans for the Silver Crown. They changed, and that was a committed fan base. That used to be the premier series. I mean, that used to be not only your road to Indy, that was Indy at one point. Those Silver Crown cars were your Indy cars. And then even closer to what we're doing now, that was a series that if you excelled in that series, you were, you know, your next step was an Indy car. And that was the premier division of USAC, and to see it kind of deteriorate to where it is right now is kind of weird. But, you know, sprint car racing as a whole is healthy. It's just, it's just kind of mind-boggling to see where certain areas of it are going and where they're trying to take it.
It's really good to see the World of Outlaws bouncing back, too.
Yeah, they a lot of things were kind of fleshed out over the last couple of years. I'm still not sure what their financial situation is going to be, but everyone back together is probably a good thing in case anything would happen to the parent organization, and it's a lot better as far as promoter's viewpoint to sell tickets to have everybody back there again. And boy, this is a tough season for someone to try to go out and run with the Outlaws. I think they started the season with 27 teams, and the disparity between the cars is not that great. If you look at the qualifying times, they're just a tick off, where the old days of the Outlaws, they'd have six or seven really high-quality teams, and then it would kind of fall off. now all these guys have good equipment, and there's a lot of good racers out there, and it's a, I'm kind of curious to see what's going to happen from this point on. This is about the point of the year where guys have to commit to go out on the road for a month or two at a time. Up until now, you can pretty much run and then go home in between races. As we get to the middle of the summer here, that's when guys really have to commit and do the next 2 or 3 months on the road. And I'm kind of curious to see who stays out and if anybody falls off.
Yeah, I got, Doug, one last thing before we let you go. How do you see, I mean, you're deeply, for people who don't know Doug all, you're obviously deeply embedded in the motorsports media game and have been for a long time. What's your take on the effects of the new media, internet, and so forth, on stock car racing, on sprint car racing, on motorsports in general?
There's a lot of good and a lot of bad. The good is the immediacy that you can get information out for sites like yours that have results and things on it. You can go on that night instead of having to wait for Tuesday or Wednesday for your Speed Sport news to show up. You can now get it immediately, and you can get it for free, and that's all good. The bad side of it is everybody and their brother's got a website, and everybody and their brother claims to be media, and there's a lot of misinformation that comes from that, and just a lot of abuses on the media end from guys who, because they have a $15 a month website, suddenly want to be given free access to every NASCAR race. You know, there's a lot of good and a lot of bad, and it really comes down to quality. If you've got a good website, you can do a lot of good for the sport. There's other guys who, frankly, they're just looking for an outlet to try to let people know who they are or something, and the quality of the product comes second, and those guys just end up doing a lot of damage. And just kind of like what we start out with the message board deal. I don't read message boards because I rarely find anything out off of them. And I think there's a lot of good for them. I think it's when they're done right, they create a neat little community among people who go on and get to know each other. But the bad part of it is there's a lot of information that's spreading, and that's it's unbelievable some of the things people will come up with.
Yeah, amen to that. I know there was probably about a four or five year period where, as far as the message boards on Karnak went, we spent most of our time, as far as the message boards went, debunking incorrect information.
Yeah.
And then we had to, we went through a period where we had to remove about 25% of our reading or
invented the Windex term.
Yeah, participating audience. We got rid of 25% of the people. And in the last few years, it's kind of settled out to be, you know, maybe more like what it should be. But I absolutely agree with you on that point you made.
Yeah, it's really a respect issue. If people who go on there respect each other, respect the racers, you know, just things like guys who either get hurt or lose a ride. I mean, I've never really understood the mentality of some people that they don't understand. If their buddy loses his job at the factory and suddenly can't support his kids, that's not funny. But if a racer gets fired and suddenly can't support his kids, that's laughable. That you can make jokes about it and say it's about time he got fired, he was awful, and somebody else needs to be in that car. I've just never understood the mindset where people will say that, and they do it about owners, they do it about promoters. I think this weird area we're in now where it's an us-against-them deal with promoters, I don't know how we got there. Without promoters, we don't have racing. And there are bad promoters, there's no doubt, but all promoters aren't bad, and there shouldn't be this huge us-against-them mentality. And just about every message board, that's really prevalent, that every promoter's bad, every fan is good. Not, I don't know where we started with that, but
amen, Doug. Well, Doug, what's up next on the table for Doug Ault?
We're still plugging forward. You know, Sprint Car Midget Magazine, we're 5.5 years down the road now, and, you know, we're worldwide. We've got a number of things that we're working on, and our stay-in-school program is one of the things we really launched, really kicked in this year. We've got drivers around the country that are going into schools. We provide them printed material to hand out to all the kids where they bring in race cars and talk to the kids about their future and some of the things that are involved with, like, an area of the areas around racing and how important an education is to that. And we've just had some really great response. That's been kind of the main focal point outside the magazine that we've been working on this year. And we've just had some great cooperation from guys like Justin Henderson from the World of Outlaws, and we've got some other World of Outlaws guys that are going to go out. Josh Spencer, who runs USAC, Dan Goodman out in Arizona. We've got a guy in Canada now is going to start the series, and we've got probably about 15 or 20 other guys around the country that are already involved, and we keep getting contacted every day from other racers that want to go out to schools, bring their cars out, and do these seminars. And every time they do, I mean, the response is just that, well, this is the best assembly we've ever had in this school. So it's a win-win situation. It's good for racing. Hopefully we can get some younger fans in. Hopefully we can get some kids thinking about their future and their education. And we've had one racer in particular, he's turned it into a corporate sponsorship based not so much on his racing, but on the fact that he's going and dealing with kids and talking about their future. It's turned into a corporate sponsorship for him. So it's a win-win-win deal for everybody.
No doubt, man. It's about the kids. Well, Doug, it's been a pleasure visiting with you again. Hope to see you at the Nationals this year.
East Bay. Yeah, for sure. We'll try to get... you're talking about the East Bay Winter Nationals?
Yes, sir.
And Volusia? Yeah, we're going to definitely... We haven't been down the last 2 years. We've been kind of sorting some things out, but I can't imagine I won't be down this year. Can't stay away for that long.
We'll get him live in the house.
All right, Doug. Thanks a lot, man, and we'll check back with you from time to time throughout 2007, man. Appreciate it.
Oh, that'd be great. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks a lot, Doug.
Thank you.
All right. We'll talk to you soon, man.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Doug Aul. Been a while since I talked to Doug.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You know, it's amazing. When we went up to, I forget the studios. It was one of the big stations up in Tampa. We were on his show. That was when I first met him.
620, I think, or 970.
Or one of those. It wasn't 970, but I think it was 620. Yeah. But that was... And Doug's a real professional and a real gentleman. And
he's great to talk to, man. Absolutely. I mean, especially live, at the races.
He's a wealth of information.
Yeah, he is. And to sit down to sit down with him and talk racing with him when you're at the racetrack, great stuff.
Yeah. Craig?
Jack, on the phone I have from the Jackson Sun, Wendy Isom. Wendy, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. Thank you. Good evening.
All right. Welcome to the show, Real Racing USA, Wendy. You've been... You're here with Jack Smith, myself, Jack Smith, Rick Angies, and Craig Clark. Tell us, you've been working the beat there in Selmer, nearby Jackson, on this tragedy of just a horrible tragedy over there with the drag cars. How did you first hear about it, and how did you get involved?
Well, I'm the Sunday reporter here, and just watching the news like everyone else, I saw the Saturday night coverage, and so I knew that Sunday I would be among the follow-up crew to go to Selmer to kind of get the mood there and talk to this community that has just been devastated.
Yeah, so, you know, you went down there. You were called. You went out on Sunday for the first time?
I did. Actually, I got a call around midnight, just kind of from editors prepping us as far as what our plan was going to be for the second day coverage. And so I went right out Sunday morning to Selmer, and there was already, a memorial set up near the crash site. You could see the teddy bears and the candles and people coming to pay their respects.
What was the feeling in Selmer on Sunday?
It was very somber. I mean, this is a very close-knit community of about 4,600. So, that proverbial saying, everyone knows everyone, or it's just a real loss. And I think the fact that there were so many young people, that just really had an impact.
Now, being a tight-knit community like that, and you being media, were they willing to talk to you?
They were. I think it was since I got there early enough, all the major news cameras, the networks hadn't arrived yet, so it was still, wasn't as an intrusive feeling. So I just kind of tread lightly, but just approach people and let them talk. And I think it was kind of therapeutic for a lot of people just to talk about what they were feeling.
Now, Troy Critchley was the driver of that car. Has anybody got a chance to talk to him yet?
No, we have not been able to get a comment directly from him. We've had some information that we've reported from his website, and our sister paper, The Tennessean, they reported today that he had a previous record, that he was arrested for reckless driving in February 1999. And for driving while intoxicated in April 2000. So so that's been kind of spinning some a lot of comments today.
They're still trying to decide whether they're going to charge this driver with anything, right?
That's right. There, no charges have been filed yet.
So what could, I mean, in all reality, what could they charge this guy with if he wasn't intoxicated or anything?
Well, the Tennessee Highway Patrol, they're still currently investigating a number of factors that may have contributed to the accident. They said, including crowd control, safety precautions, and the preparation and conditions of the roadway. So other than that, I'm really not familiar with what other aspects of it that they might be looking at.
So to just as an overview, what are the statistics? It's a hard, cold word, but in reality, I mean, there's some people dead and some people injured. What are the numbers?
Right now, we have confirmed that 6 are dead and there are more than 20 injured. And so actually we've had some funeral services, visitation services being held really as we speak for some of the young people, some of the teenagers.
It was mostly young people from our understanding?
Mostly late teens. We even have some who were have a 15-year-old. But mostly teenagers and early 20s were the victims.
Now you have several reporters working on this, and was there a press conference today? Were you able to attend?
The press conference was yesterday. Another reporter, reporter Tawana Cheshire, she covered that. And the Tennessee Highway Patrol, they didn't say how long this investigation is going to take, but they just assured that they were putting all the pieces together and they're in this for the long haul to find out what happened.
Now, my understanding is that this event annually for the last several years, or at least the last couple of years, has brought in a lot of people to that little town. The town's about 4,000, 5,000 people, and it brings in a lot of people. Does your paper typically cover it, and was it covering it this year as like a a human interest feature?
No. Ironically, we did not have it scheduled to cover as an event, but it's been going on for about 18 years. So, it's something, that's the other ironic thing. It's something that, because it's such a small community, everyone really looked forward to it, and it really appealed to all ages. It was a family tradition for a lot of people here.
Oh.
Now, this burnout thing that they do, the burnout thing they've been doing for like the last 6 years, I believe.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I know it's been, going several years also, so I'm not sure on the exact year it started.
So how would you describe the effects that this has had on that community to this point?
Oh, it's just indescribable. I talked to a mother yesterday, and she just said she didn't have any relatives involved, but her daughter, her son has lost friends. Her friends have lost children, so it's really far-reaching.
Now, have you talked to anybody that's like one of the organizers of this event to see whether this event will continue?
We have been trying to get an interview with Larry Price, who started the Cars for Kids event, and he's just really, really torn up about it, and so we're just going to keep trying, and maybe next week, but It's just a hard time for him right now.
Yeah. So is your paper going to continue following up on this story till its conclusion?
We are. Our plan is to. We're still at this moment trying to get more stories about the survivors and the young people, particularly who passed away, still reaching out to relatives and continue to follow up as they're. The people who are in the hospital as they get better, and just keep people updated. And as well, we have our website, which is jacksonsun.com, where we are continually updating and have some video clips from people sharing their feelings about what's happened, and also have some eyewitness accounts on the site.
Yeah, after I spoke to you this afternoon, I did go on the jacksonsun.com website, and we we were able to view those videotapes, and they're kind of heart-wrenching, I guess you'd say.
Yes.
All right. Well, Craig, did you have anything else there? Okay. We're going to let you go, Wendy. We really appreciate you spending a few minutes here with you, and we will stay in touch with yourself and the other folks there at your newspaper, and if there's any information that we can be of assistance to you, please let us know.
Thank you. I appreciate you. Thank you.
Thank you, Wendy.
Thank you, Wendy.
All right.
Craig, I mean, you're the master of safety. Yeah, and there are events all over the country where they bring race cars out onto city streets. I really have never heard, except for one time, they did the Blue Max Funny Car came to DeSoto Square Mall, and they did a burnout on the road in the back. But it was all blocked off. There wasn't people standing on the side of the road and stuff. You watch the videotapes of this. I mean, there are people. The place is packed. You know, everybody's having a great time. But there's this. I mean, it's a pro gas car, I believe. It's blown over 1,000 horsepower. That, I mean, on a controlled racetrack, they get out of control.
Exactly, and that's the prime difference right there. On a on a professional racetrack that has concrete walls.
Which NHRA just put in. I mean, it was a requirement to just be an NHRA track. You have to have those concrete barriers now.
It has been for a while.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're not going to run non-national event tracks now,
right. there are a lot of tracks in the United States. There's some still left with the old guardrails.
Right. But not sanctioned by NHRA anymore.
Well, right, exactly. And right. That's because the insurance industry has came right. And said, you know, this
insurance industry.
Insurance industry.
So, I mean, this event draws 40,000 to 60,000 people to this little town. Now, don't you think somewhere doesn't somebody have to be carrying an insurance rider on that?
The bottom line is a saying that's on our website. A lack of pre-planning on your part doesn't constitute an emergency on our part. It rolls back to being prepared for the event, pre-planning, you know, some crowd barriers, some protection. If you're going to do it on a city or county or state road in the first place and not on a professional racetrack, which is where race cars belong.
Exactly.
They do not belong. Street racing, as you remember when
right.
you were a kid,
mm-hmm.
we all did plenty of it. And how many friends did you know that got killed or maimed?
I lost a couple.
Exactly. So that's why.
We used to race right out here on State Road 70.
Right. And so we have, you know, this has knocked us back again in safety back years. Because it goes right back to the whole purpose of having a racetrack is to get the guys off the street to a safe facility that has containment walls, that has fences where spectators can watch the show or deemed to be safe at you know, from what history has dictated. This is
unbelievable.
You know, we have regulations. Those walls, concrete walls, have to be 34 inches high. The containment fence has to be 50 feet away from the wall and a minimum of 4 feet high. And this is for this reason. If the car, anything can happen. Okay, when that car does a burnout, the axle can snap. Anything can happen. I've seen them all the time. You turn sideways. When you burn out, you break traction.
You lose traction.
Right, exactly. This road was not designed for a race car that can go 200 miles per hour. When you lose traction like that, especially on an ideal situation is a racetrack is flat, perfectly flat. It's prepared with VHT or substitute right. another type of glue that allows the car to stick to the track.
Whole different kind of asphalt.
Well, Craig, what do you say to these people who say, just to play devil's advocate a little bit here, what do you say to these people who say, you know, they've been doing this event a long time, and accidents happen, and you can't stop all these. I mean, when an accident happens, it happens.
You're right. Accidents happen, and we learn from tragedies such as this. We learn that you don't do this, that this needs to go into a secure facility designed for this thing. I'm sure that there's probably a racetrack somewhere in the area
that would
have loved to host this event,
yeah.
And that's not my say, but, you know, again, goes right back to pre-planning. This event should be pre-planned in advance. All concerns, not just the safety for the car burnouts, but, you know, spectators, medical, et cetera, should all be addressed in the pre-planning stages.
I know that in our area here, if you put 1,000 people together in one place, you have to have so many permits.
Oh, absolutely.
And so many, I mean, everything has to be planned out. I just can't imagine a 40,000 to 60,000 person event not having any planning, any type of regulation.
Experience has shown that you have to contain vehicles of this type, just like you have a wall around the stock car track, because cars will go over the edge, you know, and some of the old tracks. I mean, that's why you have fences and you have walls to contain the cars when they do get crazy, to keep them out. Now, you know, that's not to say that
it's also, I'll tell you, just let me interrupt. I'll tell you this. It also is just absolutely amazing that it takes the people, it seems as if the people who promote motorsports in far, far too many instances have to have somebody looking over their shoulder, because the frivolousness with which they approach the safety issues is just, I mean, it confounds reason. I mean, it just.
And on the other hand, the people that were sitting on the side of the road watching this, I mean, in your head, you don't sit on the side of the interstate and watch cars go by.
They're kids. They're kids.
They still don't sit on the side of the 19 interstate.
19-year-olds, 17-year-olds.
It's just crazy.
Little kids, too.
They don't know. They didn't know
true.
What to do.
You know?
They probably never been to a drag race or a stock car race
probably
in their entire
not.
Life and didn't have the slightest clue. That's why it's the responsibility of the promoter.
Smoking tires.
The promoter and all people connected with him to pre-plan this event. And that's why we have fences. Fences are the same. Why do you put a fence around cattle? To contain them in an area that's designated for them to be there.
You know, it reminded me, and this is not even anywhere on the same scale, but it's the same principle. A few years ago, the Nasgrass, the lawnmower.
Another crazy
the
event that people are standing
lawnmower
around.
Lawnmower racing series practically was put out of business. For all intents and purposes, it was, because the promoters, and if they don't like it, they know how to contact me, but I'm going to tell you, their silliness and negligence caused that to happen, because they have an event, and they were too cheap to buy some bales of hay to put between them and the spectators. Nothing, absolutely nothing between these racing lawnmowers going 60, 70 miles an hour, and the spectators, one of them or two of them went off and hit people. They got, you know, and that's
the same.
Ended
it's the same
series.
Thing as like a go kart, you
exactly.
know, go karts. That's why you have hay bales or barriers. They make a plastic barrier that's, you know, this high. A
couple of $100 for bales of hay would have prevented any of that nonsense.
I guarantee
from
you, in this situation, that the state highway department in Tennessee would have been glad to work with the promoter and come up with a solution, a barrier or something of that nature, for the whole event.
I'll tell you what, let's get off this and come back with something of a lot more positive nature and talk to Rick Bristol about his Charity 200.
No doubt.
Five cars nose to tail heading down into turn number one. It's anybody's race.
Inside Florida Racing.
It's definitely crunch time. Somebody's going to have to make a move. Three laps to go as they cross the start finish line. Going down into turn number one. They start to fan out. Coming off a two. They're side by side down the back straightaway.
Inside Florida Racing.
That's it. Coming off a turn four. White flag in the air. Checkers and wreckers. Anybody's races. They go down to turn number one. They fan out. Two by two. Three wide. Coming off the turn number two. They get sideways down the back straightaway. Someone breaks loose to the top. Trying to make the run up on the high side. Going to do it the hard way around. Coming around four. There's still two by two. Three cars drop back. It's one car coming out sideways. Dude's on the inside. Coming to the line. It's anybody's race.
Inside Florida Racing.
Inside Florida Racing. Enjoy Florida Racing.
Inside Florida Racing.
Inside Florida Racing.
Inside Florida Racing.
Inside Florida Racing.
CarNag.com, your online racing community since 1997. CarNag.com is racing classifieds, racing photos, racing news, lively racing message boards, chat rooms, multimedia, and so much more. And if your race team or racing business needs a website, or your website needs a fire lit under it, look no further than CarNag.com. From affordable web hosting to fancy flash animation, CarNag gets it done.
I'm Racing Movie Man at USA Speedway, and you're listening to Real Racing USA.
Do you need to raise your land and business to new heights? Then you need to call Evergreen Development and Construction. They do it all, from land development, construction, drainage, excavating, site prep, and even environmental projects. No job is too big for Evergreen Development and Construction. Give them a call at 813-478-8847. And don't forget to check out the late model Evergreen Development Construction Race Team. They'll be at a track near you. And remember, just think green. Evergreen Development and Construction. 813-478-8847.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Movie Theater Ticket Ripper Upper.
Mr. Movie Theater Ticket Ripper Upper.
Truly the long arm of the law at the movie theater. You and a velvet rope are all that keep the huddled masses from a free flick.
You're the man now.
Ever vigilant, you boldly demand to see our stub. Getting a little personal, don't you think?
Can I see your stub?
Who's the guy in the military-style uniform that would make any third-world dictator proud? Mr. Movie Theater Ticket Ripper Upper. That's who.
Salute the general.
So crack open a nice cold Bud Light, Stubmaster, because you really tear it up.
Mr. Movie Theater Ticket Ripper Upper.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Real Racing USA coming to you live from the Snook River Grill, which is where, Rick?
2505 Manatee Avenue East, which is State Road 64.
In sparkling
Southern Tampa
Bay.
Bradentucky.
Hey!
4 miles east of the interstate, 15 miles from Myakka City.
That's right. Also, going to be the place where we can't announce the date yet, but in coming up very soon, we're going to have another TBARA Wing Sprint night here at the Snook River Grill.
It's always fun when we bring
the also cars have in. To mention again, and I know our guest who's on the line, Rick Bristol, is going to be there, the Sunshine Speedway reunion up at the Quaker Steak and Lube in St. Petersburg or Largo.
July the 24th.
But we're also going to have a Sarah Manna Speedway reunion some point here this summer.
Yeah, this summer. Probably August. Yeah. I'm looking at August.
Right. We're racking up the minutes on Rick's cell phone.
It's controlled chaos.
Every year, starting last year, Rick Bristol puts on an event to help out a needy family. This year, it's the little girl, Kaylee. And the pictures on the website, on Rick's website, are pretty amazing.
Right.
Rick Bristol's with us right now. Rick, how are you doing tonight, man?
Hey, Jack, how are you guys doing tonight?
We're hanging in there.
We're here.
Craig's just here. That's all he's got to say for himself.
I'm just here. It's been a rough week.
Before we get off on the truckers deal, what do you think about this Sunshine Speedway reunion show?
I'm excited about it. You know, I spent 6 years there announcing, and never missed a night of racing there while I was announced. Well, I take that back. I missed one, but I drove back and forth from Orlando every week, and I'm gonna tell you something. There was just going over there every week was great. It was great racing. We had some tremendous shows. You know, had the opportunity to do some television and all kinds of stuff there. So those were a great 6 years, and I'm excited to get back and see everybody. Actually had a chance to talk a little bit about that last night because I had Laverne Patrick and Ray Hickman and Tom Lawrence, who worked over there. They were over for our meeting last night, and we were talking about the reunion. They're just super excited to get everybody together and have a good time with it.
I was actually there your last night. I was there, and I mean, everybody in the grandstands had chill bumps when you gave your little speech there at the end.
Well, I tell you, you know, like I said, you spend 6 years going over there every night, you know, every week, and the relationships you develop, and you know, Bonnie and Frank Hill, I loved them. They were great folks. They treated me, you know, tremendous. And you know, when you go there to the racetrack and you got to be, you know, around Laverne, and Laverne is just, I mean, he's an amazing guy. He just has a laid back of, you know, deal. He don't get excited. He's You know, you got to do a lot to get them mad. But I mean, they just, you know, to be around those people and just to be those, you know, be around those fans. I knew so many of the fans, you know, that came up to us every week and talked to us. So I knew a lot of them too. So it was an emotional night to depart there. But you know, things work for a reason and we moved on from there. But I love those 6 years and I'm excited to go back down there and just see everybody and talk again.
Yeah. I saw Laverne up at, Auburndale Speedway, yeah, they better turn me down. I'm blowing them all out here. Yeah, I saw him up at Auburndale Speedway's grand opening of the new ownership. He's a rock star, that guy.
Well, I tell you, you know, it's I've used Laverne several times for some of my stuff. He helped do our go-kart fundraisers for a number of years. Once, you know, I had went over there and started working, he wanted to do those, and he filled in for me when I worked at Volusia. He, you know, when I started working with Fast Truck there, a couple years ago, I wanted him and Ray, and now they've kind of moved together as a group over to Auburndale and are working together. They're a good group of guys. You know, they everybody likes them, and they treat everybody good. But he knows how to run a show, and he puts down his foot when he needs to.
All right, Rick, you got 15 minutes. We got 15 minutes to cover every aspect we possibly can of this this year's Truckers 200. So tell us all about it.
Well, you know, we're in the initial stages of trying to get everything together and organized, but it will be December 14th and 15th this year. The PRI show moved up a week to the weekend we had last year, so we're pushing it back a week. And you know, there was the talk about trying to do it with that, but if weather is a problem, then it pushes us right off the map. And so I want this to be a standalone event. I don't want it to be tied to that big show, because if that big show decides to move to another city, you know, that hurts you. We want to build something that's here. It's Florida. It's helping our people, and we want our fans and our drivers and stuff from Florida to be there. So it'll be the 14th and 15th. It'll be basically the same as last year. It'll be a two-day event. The first night, the only thing we've really changed with that, we'll still qualify the trucks, first round qualifying. We'll have the tech and all that stuff during the day, and the top 20 will be locked in. We'll run mini cups that night. And then the only other race now that we added this year is we're going to run a 50-lap, $500 to win, strictly stock event. And that's just going to be mayhem, I'm sure. But that'll be something a little bit added to the Friday. Then after that, we'll still have our barbecue and music. And we're hoping the weather is not as cold as it was last year. Last year, their weekend was much more pleasant than ours. So I'm hoping with the date change, it'll stay the same. We don't know. So that's the plan, and then Saturday will be the big deal. We're currently working. And the only thing we may add to the show on Saturday is to begin a little bit early with opening ceremonies, and part of the opening, we're going to have some sort of a jump or a crash or something wild like that that we might throw into the beginning of it. That's really the only changes, but basically everything else will be the same. And right now, the meeting we had last night that I was trying to get some people to help with some things up until the event, working on committees to get the opening ceremonies organized, that type of thing. It's a lot to try to do all this, and I learned a lot last year trying to do it all myself, and so I'm trying to get some people to help with some things and to sell some sponsorships and that type of thing. So that's kind of what the meeting was about, also some of the officials, what we were going to do. And pretty much we got the same deal. Brad Hockaday will be coming this year again. He'll be the race director. He's bringing the Raceiver transponder system. We'll have all that again. Laverne will be flagging. Ray will be flagging one of the positions. Butch Pierce, Barb Pierce, just a number of the same people that were officiating that last year will be there. So it'll be good because it'll be the same crew working together. We learned some stuff last year. We've made a few adjustments to some procedures and rules that'll make the event a little bit better in the race. And so, you know, basically all that's the same. Now we're working on who we're going to be able to get there. David Starr, who was there last year, already told me, you know, after the event was over, when I talked to him on the phone, he had so much fun, he wants to come back. So pretty much all I got to do is get back with him and get that organized. But there's a chance that his teammate this year, who came to some of my children's home fundraisers, Rick Crawford, may be able to come. We're trying to get that nailed down. The other thing is we got two possibilities that came up last night with conversations that we could have two drivers there from the Cup Series. And I'm not, you know, again, I don't want to give anything away until I have it in writing. But right now there's a good possibility we have two, and there's another possibility for two other ones. So, that's
so
where
was that
right
Jeff
now.
Gordon? And
if we can get those, that's going to be the big bust. That's going to really be the thing that's going to make us be able to have this thing really be huge.
So was that Jeff Gordon and Dale Jr.?
No.
Oh, okay. I thought that's what I heard.
Not quite that big.
Oh, okay.
The other thing is, we're also still trying to get with I'm still trying to get with Dave Rudiman, and I will, to see about him coming back, because he had said he would like to try to come back. It's just going to depend on what goes. And I'll tell you right now, we would absolutely have Carl Edwards there this year. Absolutely, he wants to come. I talked to his manager. And I also had the opportunity to talk to him, and he would absolutely be here, except for they have the big Roush weekend at their place where all their sponsors come and they do this big thing, and there's just no way he can get away because of it moving. If it was on the same weekend, depending on how the banquet worked out, you know, that was the problem last year. He had obligations with Office Depot and stuff, and he could not get over there. So we never really got that together, but he would absolutely love to be there. But he is going to do something. Send down some stuff or whatever. I've just got to get back with her. Right now I've got an autographed shirt from Tony Stewart, and I've got an autographed Fox television shirt from Larry McReynolds, a couple of items for our celebrity auction that we are really – that's the other thing. I wanted to get somebody to try to work a little harder on that, to try to really get that going, and we've got a little bit more connections on that for this year, so we're hoping to get that. And there's one other person doing a couple of calls for me to get a semi-retired driver that lives kind of close to here. So that would be interesting, too.
Oh, yeah. Semi-retired drivers are cool. Now, I think what you absolutely ought to do is get Carl to come be a guest maybe a month before the event on Real Racing USA. It could not possibly hurt in putting people people aware of it.
No, it couldn't possibly hurt, and that would be, you know, that would be something we can try to get with her, with her to see if that's a possibility of getting that organized. Because they'll actually be, maybe we could do that sometime around the Homestead event.
That would be great.
That'd be wonderful.
So I will see what I can do there. But yes, it wouldn't hurt to get him to plug it.
And, that's December 14th and 15th.
Yes, sir.
At Orlando Speed World.
At Orlando Speed World once again. And, you know, we had a great event last year. The weather hurt us a little bit, not having the advertising, but it hurt it. But I've got some really good leads right now on having a couple of pretty decent sized sponsors and a couple of other ones that could be big sponsors. So if we can get those, then I'll have the money, and especially if we get these cup drivers, we'll have some money to be able to use for advertising. And I think if we have the people that we look like we could possibly have, even if it's just a couple of them out of the group that we're talking about, with the truck guys too, we could have an excellent draw for people to be there. So I don't want to give away anything, I kind of hinted on one, but I'm not going to give on the other ones until I know 100%. I just don't like to do that unless I'm 100% sure.
So have you hooked up with NASA this year?
I'm sorry, with who?
With NASA.
With NAPA?
NASA.
Oh, NASA.
NASA, the space shuttle.
No, I haven't. They won't let me go near because I'm too heavy.
Okay. All right, Rick. Rick, in our remaining moments here, why don't you bring us a little bit? Last year it was all about a young boy named Tommy Hopkins, and this year it's all about Kaylee.
Yes.
Tell us about the people that this is for in this event.
Right.
What's the deal with Tommy now? How's he doing? And
well, the latest check on Tommy was very good. They showed no further advancement of the disease. So that means that the baby's umbilical cords and all the blood cells and all that was put in there are doing their job. And we're really excited about that. He's actually he started playing flag football, and he's been able to go back to school classes. So that is going very, very well. And Tommy and his family will be back. They're going to be coming to the event. They'll give us all an update while they're there and have an opportunity to share in helping somebody else. And they're very, very excited about that. So they're going to be there. But Kaylee Helmick is a little baby. She's 9 months old. Her father is Bob and Misty Helmick as their parents. And Kaylee has a rare heart disease, and I can't say the name, so don't ask me to say it. But what it is her heart is underdeveloped, and she's already had two open heart surgeries and five heart catheters done, and she's only 8 months old. She's already had a lung surgery and a diaphragm surgery, and those were surgeries that had to be done because of the heart being underdeveloped. They had to downsize the other organs a little bit to keep things working properly for right now. Now, there's a heart catheter that they're probably going to have to do sometime around August or September in that area. They're waiting to find out for sure. And the test there is going to be very, very important, because if it shows any further deterioration of the heart, then there's really nothing else that they may be able to do at that point. And so that's what we're praying for. That's what we're really going after that thing and just hoping that'll take care of it. She's doing really well last night. Her parents came to the meeting last night. And she was smiling and laughing, and she has to be fed on a tube, and they have to go to the doctors quite often and have things checked and that type of thing. And she's on several different kind of medicines and all that. The big thing is the family has lost their home. They're staying with her mom. They've had to file bankruptcy. She works for SunTrust Bank, where my wife works. And because of all the time missed and all that kind of stuff, she's worried about her job and that type of thing. But they're working with her, and they're trying to make sure that doesn't happen. But her insurance is all they have. And he's been having to stay with the baby and take care of the baby all day, so he's not able to work. So the financial burden of this, plus the bills that are piling up, is enormous. So.
And there's all the kinds of information and lots of pictures that'll just melt your heart on carsracermarketing.com. And I'll tell you, Rick, you ought to get on that guy from Carnac and get him to put something on your website, on his website, on the front page of Carnac, because I'm looking all over. I don't see a link one on the front page of Carnac for Cars Racer Marketing. You better get on that guy.
Do like we do.
Just on that guy, but I try not to get on him too hard, because he's doing this out of the kindness of his heart and has done. All of the work on the website and all, so we appreciate that. So we try not to push too hard.
Yeah, well, I guess we need to. Maybe we'll send them emails or something.
And we'll do something.
Threats.
We'll continue to promote the race.
Is on there. The entry form is on there. All the rules, all the race procedures, the schedule, everything is up on the thing now, and it's updated. And I'm working on packets. I actually sent a bunch of them out. To a driver who's going down to DeSoto, I think in a couple weeks when they run the trucks again, he's going to pass them out down there. And so we're beginning the packet thing and getting those out to the drivers. We've already got four pre-entries. We didn't have four last year until October. So we're ahead of the game this year so far. And the talk after last year from so many of the drivers that didn't come when they heard how great it was and how great the race was, and, you know, from the other drivers, there's just a bunch of them that are really excited about being there. So I think we're going to have a huge truck count this year. I really believe it's going to be big.
All right.
Hey, Ray, Rick, real Rick, quick, Week? Real quick, yes. Rick, script me something together so I can read it to everybody at DeSoto every weekend.
You got it.
Hey, Rick, we got some Harley dragsters in the background warming up here, so we're going to have to let you go, and we will talk to you real, real soon, man.
Yes, sir. And once we have any confirmed drivers, you will be the first to know.
All right, brother. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Rick.
All right, see you guys.
It's no wonder everybody says nobody beats a Dayton Andrews Dodge deal. I mean nobody. They must sell 200 cars, trucks, and vans to break all sales records. In order to do that, they'll guarantee $1,000 if they can't beat any deal you bring into them on any new or used vehicle in stock. Every new Dodge drastically reduced. Every used vehicle drastically reduced. How about no money down? Take advantage of these great offers with lender's approval. $1,000 guaranteed includes rebates, and they reserve the right to buy back the vehicle from the selling dealer to give to their customer at a lower price. Ask about the $4,000 minimum trade-in allowance. Check out the Dodge Caravans, the Durangos, and the Neon. This week, Dayton Andrews Dodge is offering the lowest prices and also no money down. Call 321-0500. See that the Dayton Andrews Dodge way beats all the other ways to shop for a vehicle. 22nd Avenue and US 19 in St. Peter's. Dayton Andrews Dodge.
Do you
need to raise your land and business to new heights? Then you need to call Evergreen Development and Construction. They do it all, from land development, construction, drainage, excavating, site prep, and even environmental projects. No job is too big for Evergreen Development and Construction. Give them a call at 813-478-8847. And don't forget to check out the late model Evergreen Development Construction Race Team. They'll be at a track near you. And remember, just think green. Evergreen Development and Construction. 813-478-8847.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Movie Theater Ticket Ripper Upper.
Mr. Movie Theater Ticket Ripper Upper.
Truly the long arm of the law at the movie theater. You and a velvet rope are all that keep the huddled masses from a free flick.
You're the man now.
Ever vigilant, you boldly demand to see our stuff. Getting a little personal, don't you think?
Can I see your stuff?
Who's the guy in the military-style uniform that would make any third-world dictator proud? Mr. Movie Theater Ticket Ripper Upper, that's who.
Salute the general.
So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, stuff master, because you really tear it up.
Mr. Movie Theater Ticket Ripper Upper.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
It's time to go drag racing! 200 plus miles per hour! And it's that time of the night with our two-lane man, Mr. Stevie LaTemp.
All right, Stevie, let's go drag racing.
Hey, guys, how you doing this evening?
Great, how you doing?
I'm doing just great. I've got somebody on the phone I want to talk about tonight that I call him the Man of Steel. He is just probably just one tough sucker, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean it. He's able to withstand just about anything. Chicago Joe Scatella, and Joe took a bad spill back here in Arizona. Back I guess it's been better than a month now. The time flies, probably about 6 weeks. And at 201 mile an hour, laid a bike down at the traps. I mean, here, visualize the human body, nothing but leathers and a helmet. Suddenly, just bouncing down the track, and I mean, you know, unbelievable at 200 mile an hour, and this man survived this thing. Like, you know, just what can I say? I was scared to death when I saw it happening. Oh my gosh, this guy's in trouble. And I looked at my screen, I saw 201 mile an hour, and he took out the cone, and I thought, oh gosh, this is not good. But he's tough, and if I got any folks, here he is. Joe, how you doing this evening?
I'm doing pretty good, and I want to thank everybody who's called me or is concerned about me, and sponsors that stuck by me, and HDRA and Belt Drives for sure, and hopefully my new fuel bike, top fuel bike, is being dealt with John in Texas there at weekend, and hopefully I'll be back out there in, you know, probably by August, hopefully.
I wanted to ask you first, a couple questions for all the race fans out there. Just when did you get started in racing bikes?
Oh, I started riding when I was 10 and probably got into just street racing and stuff shortly after that. And then hill climbing, flat tracking, and all that kind of stuff. And then got into fuel drag racing probably in 1972-3. So it's going on 35 years of dealing with uncontrolled explosions, you know, and people, when they see it on TV, don't really know how much you got to drive these things, you know what I'm saying? It just doesn't do it any justice. It looks easy. It's not.
Well, you know, the one thing that I noticed that really scared me was the fact that I watch you guys climb on top of these things. And it's an open pushrod motor. Have you ever had one of those pushrods kick out at you?
Well, I've had just about everything happen or done. Lucky to still be talking about it by learning and seeing other people and trying to learn from their mistakes also. And pushrods, I'm not sure if I ever got hit with them. I got hit with flames and lifter blocks and cylinder heads and chains and stuff like that. Fly weights off the clutches. Pushrods, they usually just go flying out, you know, all over the track. And I've had to avoid a few racing a couple of people, but other than that, I can't say I got hit by a pushrod.
So pushrod's about the only thing that has missed you. As far as safety equipment, I know you have leathers, but what else do you wear whenever you go out there and mount that bike?
Well, in my case, I wear pads under the leathers. You know, I wear even these little cheap skateboarding pads on my elbows and my knees and back, and because I can't rely on the leather or the gloves or any of that to stop trauma, you know. I mean, you're still going to get burnt through it, but the trauma is usually caused from, you know, hitting the surface pretty hard, you know.
Well, and curiosity, do you have, is like a chest protector or anything like that in there too? Because
yeah, you have a ballistic plate or a trauma plate over your heart, you know, and then you got a strap of strength around the motor, you know, and that usually keeps most of the times from happening. Unfortunately, we learned that by watching people get killed. You know, I've had a few friends that I was right there with, you know, and stuff. And even back in the day before we even tied motors down, I was making restraints for the motor out of, you know, heim joints and stock or whatever it took to hold the top end down. If you blow it, it's going to move. The explosion is going to move either the cylinder up or the head up, and there's been the cases where the cylinder and the head has blown right through the frame and luckily missed people, and you'll see them blow 50 feet in the air, you know. Hopefully it's not when you're going too fast, you know. Yeah, they can be very devastating, and no one ever knows when it's going to happen. It's just the idea of making sure before you go out there, your crew and you know that the motor's sound, you know, but you never know.
Well, I know I saw one. I didn't see the accident, but I saw the picture where you had an explosion, and all I could basically see was your head, shoulders, and the rest. You were engulfed in fire, as I believe the cylinder head had lifted right up off it and blew out the sides. And
yeah, that was on the Pro Fuel bike at the same race. We had did some new things to that motor, and it first lifted the rear head, and then when the second stage of the fuel comes on, it lifted the front head. And that basically is just, you know, fuel and oil trying to cut itself out of the combustion chambers, you know. And it looks way worse than it is. You know, it's not an explosion. It's just, you know, kind of lifting the head and torching it, you know, and it just cuts it like a cutting torch, you know. And that's what you're seeing. That aluminum, when it burns, is sulfuric, you know, and it's hard to breathe when that happens, but it's not as devastating as an explosion, you know. It's just doing damage because there's too much fuel and the motor ain't lighting it, you know. So it's lifting the head off the cylinder, and it's squeaking out of there. And that's basically what you're seeing.
Well, I'll tell you what. You had a rough weekend. You have one bike that explodes, blows the cylinder heads off it, and your other bike, take us for the ride.
Okay, I don't remember the ride, we've got into the Outlaw. The bike has just been put together. We just made it for this race, and I was hoping to start the season out great. And you know, it's all repainted and redone and polished, chromed, everything. And the bike's giving me fits going to the left. So we qualify with a 90, luckily, and I'm cutting it at about 5 seconds, you know. Because its keep wants to go to the left, so it means I lose in the first round. In competition, I try the Outlaw thing just to run the bike, just to get some time on this bike, and I was going to take it through the top end no matter what, and it spun the tire once. After it grabbed, it took off really well. It kept pulling me to the left, and it by the time I got through the two last cones, it was so hard to the left that you lose your eyesight when this happens. You get what's known as tunnel vision. You know, you don't know where you're at on the track, you know, and the only thing I could see is a cone. What cone it was, I'm not sure. And so normally in a situation like that, pound the bike hard. You know, you grab a handful and get it to move straight, you know, and then I've done that in the past many times. And this time it went further to the left. And by now, I'm going to be either hitting a cone, hitting the guy next to me, or hitting the wall. I'm in the right-hand lane. And you're worried about the guy next to you. You know, it's a guy I don't run too often, and I'm not sure where he's at. And even if it wasn't, I knew I was in trouble then. And so all you could picture is the cone. And when you go past center of the track, I have to hit the brakes. When I hit the brakes, of course, on a sandy track, the bike come out from underneath me, went to the left, flipped me all the way to the left, which pounded the handlebars into my wrist. Foot peg folded up on my left foot, which broke the bones in it. But I got the bike straight up, and it went past center. And as it goes past center, I knew I was sort of in the center of the lane, or not in the left lane, you know.
Yeah.
All I could see now is, 3 feet in front of you, you're seeing the ground go by. And I just dove off, you know, figuring I got to get away from this bike. You know, if you don't get away from the bike, and if it grabs you in any way, it's going to be a severe accident. You know what I'm saying? So I just tried to get away from it so I could not hit nothing. You know what I'm saying? If you hit something, you're in trouble. So I see the ground and I bail off. With that, I break my right shoulder, you know, and, but at least I'm on the ground. It shuts the bike off, but the bike keeps going. I find this out later. And, hits the only tree out in the desert, you know, with those figures, you know, and it has ruined all kind of stuff on the front of the bike, the front end, the wheel, the fuel system. But getting back to the accident. Now I'm on my back, and I'm going, okay, I'm in good shape because I can see the sun, you know. And I'm trying to control myself from flipping, you know, so you try sliding, you know. And I finally stopped sliding. I guess I flipped about 8 times, and I was trying to get up, and I could see my wrist, and, like, my gloves were all tore up, you know, because I tried to hold my hands down and slide on the back, you know, safest way to do it. And by the time I tried to get up, the ambulances were already there, you know, and they held me down, you know. But I knew I had damage to parts of me, you know, and that's about it.
How did your wife Penny handle this?
Well, as any wife would, you know, they're scared for you when, you know, they don't want you to leave them. And anyway, if you're going to die, you know, and
I'm sure that was close.
No, she handled it great, and my crew handled it great, and everybody did the right thing, in my opinion. You know, I just didn't want them to put me in a helicopter, you know, because I just don't want to be in no helicopter because of I was in Vietnam, and there's things about that I don't like and seen and whatever, and. I was okay. I didn't go into shock until I got into the hospital, you know. So they had me laying on the ground, and they're asking me my name and address, and then at the same time they're going, oh, left arm, right foot, this, that. I go, no, it's the right shoulder, left wrist, you know, because I could see my hand, you know, I knew my hand, and he's asking me to make a circle, you know, like okay sign or a thumbs up sign, and I'm doing all that, but... And they're looking at each other like, how's he doing that? But it turned out to be that was my worst injury, you know.
Well, guys, I do want to tell you something that I haven't told you about, Joe. Not only is Joe, like I say, he's the man of steel in my eyes, but he's not a youngster either. You heard he started back in fuel bikes back in 72 or 73, and he's 60 years old, and he could drive a top fuel bike like he's 16. And you're going to be back with us now. You said you were going to try to get back to us in Virginia, was it?
No, I'm thinking more like, you know, to be realistic about it and what the doctors say and everything, it probably wouldn't be till August, so that would mean it would be from Oregon on. This is what I'm hoping. And if I can't do it till next year, I won't, you know, but I'm just waiting for the top fuel bike to get finished and for the doctor to make sure my wrist is going to be okay. You know, all the other injuries, you know, I could kind of live with, you know what I'm saying? Like, they got to get a bone cut out of my foot, but I don't need to do that right away, you know. It's just my wrist. It was a pretty severe injury to the wrist, and they were worried about that. It actually jammed the wrist straight down the two bones of your wrist. You know what I'm saying? And it broke the ends off of the bones, and it shattered the wrist bone, you know.
It sounds like really the safety team did their job, because you said that no sooner you stopped, the ambulance was there. And
oh yeah, they told me.
Out.
Oh yeah, no, they were doing. Everybody was doing the best they could, you know. In my opinion, you know, like they wanted to cut this off and that off, and no, just pull them off, you know, and stuff. And you know, I kept looking at my gloves, you know, because I knew it had ground some of the tips of my fingers off, because I was trying to hold myself, you know, from flipping, you know.
Oh,
and, so when you grind the ends of your fingers down, you know, it was pretty painful. They were pretty painful because you got nerve endings sticking out. But due to all this stuff I wear, it actually, other than the blunt trauma, you know, uh-huh. The only road rash I really had was on my knees, because the leather's wrapped around my knees so far that it was just leather to the knee. You know, it moved the pad. In other words, the leathers were too big. And I had some road rash on my one hand, but I wear a lot of protective gear on the bike. You know, even under the leathers, you know, I wear gear.
And that's what it takes to do what you guys do. And Joe, we applaud you for everything you've done. And it's just amazing that, like you said, the endurance and what it takes to do this on two wheels.
Right. Well, we wear this jacket that Mike Romine and his guys started, 200 mile an hour club a few years ago. Mm-hmm. That was for going upright. There's guys like her and I and Ray Price and so on and so forth that went down at over 200. So I'm going to have to reword that on the back of the jacket I wear. You know.
Yeah, and like you said, you know, that's why you guys are still around, and we appreciate everything you do, and you know, God bless you and stay safe.
Well, I really appreciate you people thinking of me and knowing we're still here. And I like to do what I do. And I miss all my competitors and all the people who do the same thing I do. And I miss being out there, you know. But like I say, that as soon as I can, I will be.
Well, thanks for talking to us tonight on Real Racing USA.
Yeah, and we'll be right back with Stevie LeTemp and more All Harley Drags, I think.
Hello?
Yo.
It's come down to this. 100 laps, 5 to go at the line. 5 cars nose to tail heading down into turn number 1. It's anybody's race.
Inside Florida Racing.
It's definitely crunch time. Somebody's going to have to make a move. 3 laps to go as they cross the start finish line. Going down into turn number 1. They start to fan out. Coming off a 2. They're side by side down the back straightaway.
Inside Florida Racing.
That's it. Coming off a turn 4. White flag in the air. Checkers and wreckers. Anybody's race as they go down to turn number 1. They fan out. 2 by 2. 3 wide. Coming off of turn number 2, they get sideways down the back straightaway. Someone breaks loose to the top, trying to make the run up on the high side. Going to do it the hard way around. Coming around 4, there's still 2 by 2. 3 cars drop back. It's 1 car coming out sideways. Dude's on the inside, coming to the line. It's anybody's race.
Inside Florida Racing.
Inside Florida Racing. Enjoy Florida Racing.
Inside Florida Racing.
Inside Florida Racing.
Inside Florida Racing.
Inside Florida Racing.
Carnac.com, your online racing community since 1997. Carnac.com is racing classifieds, racing photos, racing news, lively racing message boards, chat rooms, multimedia, and so much more. And if your race team or racing business needs a website, or your website needs a fire lit under it, look no further than Carnac.com. From affordable web hosting to fancy flash animation, Carnac gets it done.
We're back here, Real Racing USA, talking some drag racing with our number one guy, Mr. Stevie LaTemp. And Stevie, who do we have next?
Well, gang, right now we're going to a class called Dragmasters Hot Street. And the man I've got, Bruce Kronberger III, is literally dominating this year. Absolutely incredible at what he has done. And give you just a little background on him. So far this year, this man, well, I don't have the wins right here in front of me, or do I? Yeah, I don't. I'm not going to give you his win record, but I will tell you this. This past race up at Norwalk, not only did he win the race, he was low qualifier, he was low ET, at top speed, he put a whole shot on his competitor. He literally did everything that you could possibly want to do. Guys, this is Bruce Kronberger. Bruce, how you doing this evening?
I'm doing pretty good, Steve. Thanks.
So tell me about your weekend at Norwalk.
Well, Norwalk was a pretty good weekend, like you just said. Number one qualifier, all that good stuff. Bike was running really good. Just everything was working.
Well, curiosity, on your bike, a little background about what Hot Street is in the class. Tell us just a little bit about your bike.
Okay, well, Hot Street is a class for bikes with no wheelie bars, no air shifter, street-legal tires. There's a 98 cubic inch limit on the engines, but the bigger the engine is, the heavier the bike has to be because it's based off of a 8 pounds per cubic inch rule. So I actually went with a smaller motor for the class, which is 79 inches, so quite a bit lighter than some of the competitors are for motor size. So I think that's kind of working for me.
You're coming off a great season for 2006, and I might add that not only is he the current champion in the Hot Street division for the All Holly Drag Racing Association, but he was also champion back in 2004. He's already racked up. We've got two runner-ups. This makes your second win of the season. So this looks like another year, huh? You think? Is it too early to start looking at the possibility of a 2007 championship, your third championship?
Well, I think it's a little bit early, to say anything about wrapping anything up yet. It's looking good. Two runner-ups and two wins already. They got a pretty good points lead right now, but anything can change at any time, so it's tough to say.
Are you going out to Seattle, Washington next week with us?
I'm not going to be in Seattle this year. I went out last year, made the decision that, I didn't really think it was necessary at this point to get out there for this season.
But this kind of gives you just a little breather and to get prepared for the next race. But in the same respect, it gives your opponents, like Charlie Douglas, and Dan Narland, Charles Canton, they're going to be looking hard if they're going out there to gain some ground on you. So it's going to tighten up the race, I would say, depending on just who wins now in the Dragmaster Hot Street class. What do you think?
Well, I think there's a good chance that points could be tightened up some. I've heard a pretty good rumor, though, that some of the other guys might not be there either. So I'm taking a chance on them, holding true to not being there. But we'll see. I mean, I have, I think right now I have like 113 points or something like that. So, I mean, worst case scenario, I'd still have a 3-point lead. So I'm going to say
that. But it's starting to get squeaky when you get that tight now. And I will say this. These guys are going to go out there to Pacific Raceway. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe it's like 150 feet above sea level. And the cool air, probably whoever is out there is going to run some serious numbers. I think they got a shot at shooting at that record. That's only 20 points, isn't it?
Yeah, there's 20 points to the record. There's some guys that could take a shot at it if the weather is good. Yeah, but you know, I'm just I'm going to take my chance.
Well, let me ask you a little bit. Tell me about your team. Who all goes with you, you know, and how do you travel to and from? Do you fly to and from, or do you go out in a motorhome, or just how do you, you know, get from one race to the next?
We used to take a motorhome to the races, but fuel just got too expensive to go that route for us anyway. So we've been traveling in my pickup truck, pulling the trailer, and then just you know, going to a hotel. We fly to the Far West races and kind of team up with somebody for hauling the bike. But we've driven so far to every race this year with myself and my dad and my brother. He races as well. So just a little family team here.
Yeah, I see a lot of that with the All Harley Drag Racing Association. There are a lot of families, and I know on Friday night, of course, Saturday night after the race too. I can step out of the tower and I can smell the hot dogs and the steaks out there, and everybody just seems to be having just a great time. There is some thrashing going on, but at the same time, just a lot of good times where everybody's sitting around and enjoying it. It is a lot of fun. You know, I think it's kind of a neat situation. Only thing I hate, though, that one of the things I've noticed, and I'd like your opinion on this, too, a lot of guys have problems getting their bikes out there, just like you're holding back from going to some of the Western races because of getting the bikes, you know, transported out there and the cost of fuel. Can you see any way around that? Is there anything that can be done to where, they, you know, there may be a meeting point, somebody, an 18-wheeler where guys can load their bikes in? Because, you know, I'm trying to figure out some way, you know, how can we get everybody from the East Coast out to the West and vice versa whenever we run the East Coast for the West Coast guys? Any have you thought much on that? Any solutions on that?
Well, you know, that's something that I thought about it, you know, a few times, and a bunch of guys just, you know, one guy has a big trailer, you know, team up with a bunch of guys, you know, you can go together and pitch in for the fuel, and it doesn't cost anybody nearly as much, you know, but it's just a matter of coordinating all that with people that are in the same area you are or on your way.
Yeah, because one of the things I will say that the Harley guys are literally from everywhere. I mean, north, south, east, west, just every state. You know, there are several riders that will come to go. So I would imagine there is a problem there. But it just seems like there should be some way that that we could get more of the East Coast guys to go all the way out west and vice versa. Because I know a lot of times there's some West Coast guys that don't come east of the Mississippi. It's a shame because they're great riders. And it also makes the competition tougher as well.
Right. I mean, there's good riders all over the country, and it'd be really nice to have everybody at every race. You know, have all the classes, you know, full all the time would be ideal. But you know, just trying to make that work is tough for some people.
Well, are you going to go to Sturgis?
I'm not going to go to Sturgis just because it's so close to Bristol.
Mm-hmm.
There's not much time to get, you know, from Pennsylvania out to Sturgis. You know, do that deal out there and basically have to turn right around, you know, as soon as the race is over, load up and head right to Bristol. Because, you know, Sturgis is in the middle of the week and Bristol is the very next weekend. So the next I'm going to be on the track is probably when we get to Bristol.
So you'll be at Bristol then?
Yeah, for sure.
So that would be really interesting to see when you come into Bristol and where Bruce, you're going to have to gather some points up, because I got a feeling these boys are going to be coming at you because they're not going to sit still, and it should be interesting. Well, coming up here in Hot Street. Once again, guys, we've been talking with Bruce and the man who's number one in the points, a two-time, I might add, world champion, or I should say national champion with the All-Harley Drag Racing Association, Bruce Kronberger, one tough customer.
Hey, Bruce.
Thank you for coming on tonight. I really enjoyed it, guys.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, appreciate it, and keep up the good work and get some wins.
That's the plan.
All right. Stevie, what do we have coming up next week?
Well, I tell you what, guys, Bruce isn't going, but by golly, I am. I'm headed all the way out to Seattle, Washington, to the All-Harley Drag Racing Association Cresto Hand Cleaner Pacific Nationals, presented by Destination Harley-Davidson and Downtown Harley-Davidson. And like I mentioned earlier, the sea level out there is only 150 foot above sea level. The track is extremely low, which usually creates some incredible ETs and mile per hours. And at the same time, also, the temperature is going to be cool out there. I mean, this is not Texas. You know, we're up there in the cool country in the 60s and 70s, low 70s probably in the 60s.
it's going to be the norm, and that will generate some serious power on these Harleys.
So all right.
Forward to it, guys, and I promise you I'll come back with some great stories.
Hey, great, Stevie.
Sounds good to us.
Good stuff tonight, Stevie.
Well, thank you. It was a lot of fun.
Very good, Stevie. Thank you. Have a good one.
Well, looking forward to seeing you next week.
Oh, well, buddy, and you can get all of these interviews and everything else. There's a page up on realracingusa.com. You can go there. There's all Harley. Just click on the link to All Harley Drags or Harley Drags, and there's all the shows, all the interviews, pictures, and all kinds of stuff.
Oh, another great Tuesday night here at the Snook River Grill, 2505 Manatee Avenue East in Bradenton, Florida. And we'll see you next week. Craig, you got a little bit to say?
Appreciate it. Yes, in memory of the firefighters in Charleston, I'd like to read their names that perished in the fire, as well as the victims of the Selmer, Tennessee. Charleston, South Carolina, the Sofa Superstore. Captain William Billy Hutchinson. Captain Mike Benke. Captain Lewis Mulkey. Firefighter Mark Kelsey. Firefighter Bradford Brad Beatty. Firefighter Michael French. Firefighter James Earl Drayton. Firefighter Brandon Thompson. And firefighter Melvin Champagne. Biggest loss of firefighters since 9/11. Deadliest fire in South Carolina since 1979. We'll keep you and your families in our thoughts. In Selmer, Tennessee, Raven Griswell, Nicole Griswell, Sean Michael Driscoll, Brooke Pope, Scarlett Riplogle, and Kimberly Barfield as well. And those, and all of those that were injured in this terrible tragedy, we keep thoughts out for you. Thank you. Have a good night. One more.